Well, welcome to all our guests, and hello to all those in cyberspace. Give you a cyber hug. All of you on the DVD and CD, I give you an MP3 hug. The title of the sermon today is Alone, Yet Not Alone. Alone, Yet Not Alone. I'm going to ask you a question. Or maybe a few questions. Can you be wealthy and lonely? Well, ask Howard Hughes. Can you be popular and lonely? Ask Michael Jackson. Can you be beautiful and lonely? Ask Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn had three marriages, all of which ended in divorce. You know, you don't have to be alone to feel lonely. You can feel lonely in a crowd, lonely in a club, lonely at a concert, and even, sadly, lonely in church. We've always had lonely individuals in our church, congregations that need comfort and support. We all have experienced loneliness at one time or another, yet it is a topic that is seldom addressed in a sermon. According to NASA, this last week, our entire planet is lonesome. An article entitled, Humans Will Prove We Are Not Alone in the Universe Within 20 Years, was recently published, and the article said the following, quote, just imagine the moment when we find potential signatures of life. Imagine the moment when the world wakes up and the human race realizes that its long loneliness in time and space may be over. The possibility we're no longer alone in the universe. End of quote. Apparently, NASA has never read Psalm 139, verses 7 through 12. The psalmist described very clearly that we are not alone. In fact, no flight can remove us out of God's presence. All the inhabitants of the earth are under God's watchful eye and influence. Over in Psalm 139, starting in verse 7, it says, where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall fall on me, even the night shall be light about me. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from you, but the night shines as the day. And the darkness and the light are both alike to you. Now this is explained over in Hebrews 4 and verse 13. Hebrews 4 and verse 13, it tells us this. And there is no creature hidden from his sight. But all things are naked and open to the eyes of him to whom we must give account. Brethren, you know, we are so blessed to have this knowledge. We are never alone. The world, however, is either ignorant of this fact or rejects it outright. Many in this world have good looks, talent, fame, even wealth, yet lead sorrowful lives that end in tragedy. You know, when I was writing this sermon, I thought about Elvis Presley. Elvis Presley, for instance, had a tremendous personal life, but it was tumultuous as well, including his divorce to Priscilla and an affair that he had resulting in a pregnancy and an abortion. Presley's divorce took effect on October the 9th, 1973. Twice during that year, he overdosed on barbiturates, spending 3 days in a coma in his hotel suite after the first incident. Toward the end of 1973, he was hospitalized, semi-comatose, from the effects of Demerol addiction. He finally died in 1977. And with all his fame and money, he seemed to be a lonely man. In fact, one of his famous songs was, "Are You Lonesome Tonight?" The lyrics go like this: "Are you lonesome tonight? Do you miss me tonight? Are you sorry we drifted apart? Does your memory stray to a brighter sunny day when I kissed you and called you sweetheart? Do the chairs in your parlor seem empty and bare? Do you gaze at your doorstep and picture me there? Is your heart filled with pain? Shall I come back again? Tell me, dear, are you lonesome tonight?" And like Elvis, too many adults and even children, both in the world and in the church, are lonesome and filled with emotional pain due to a number of reasons. Many are experiencing grief and loneliness. The two often go together. Some actually grieve over being lonely. Many who are sad and lonely put on a smiling mask to hide the pain. However, underneath, they are still in pain. Grief and loneliness enters our life through many doors. A mom sitting by a window waiting for her runaway to come home. A newly widowed woman in a Bible class full of couples. A divorced dad unlocking the door of his dark and empty apartment. A husband whose spouse has become afflicted with Alzheimer's. A teen in the hospital with a broken neck after a car wreck that killed her best friend. A wife who has discovered that her husband is having an affair. A family who was spared injury in their storm cellar but lost their house and all their possessions in an F5 tornado. A child whose father was just sent to prison. A young boy who's being bullied at school. A spouse whose mate has recently decided to no longer attend church. Recently, we learned of a tragic mass killing in California. The young killer was named Elliot Roger. He set out to slay every person he saw on the streets of Isla Vista and Santa Barbara, as well as every girl in the sorority house of the nearby university. And what was his state of mind? He posted several videos with the titles like, "Being Lonely on Spring Break Sucks." On May 23rd, he posted a YouTube video in which he said, "Elliot Roger, lonely vlog, life is so unfair." As we can see, loneliness, which is not dealt with properly, can result in anger, depression, and even suicide, as it did with Elliot. Elliot Roger not only set out to kill others, but also committed suicide himself. Now, Mother Teresa once said this, quote, "The biggest disease today is not leprosy or cancer. It's the feeling of being uncared for, unwanted, of being deserted and alone." End of quote. A church congregation often has one or more lonely, disconnected individuals at any point in time. So today I want to briefly examine the topic of loneliness, especially as it pertains to Christians, and how both the lonely Christian and those who know the lonely person should respond. In searching for information on this subject, I found numerous sources which I will use. Back in September of 2010, Jim McCutcheon posted a sermon on the internet entitled Getting a Handle on Loneliness. Also, the following books were used in my research on loneliness. One, Straight Talk on Loneliness by Joyce Meyer. Two, Living Alone by Stella Benson. Three, Defeating Loneliness by Peter H. Burgess. And I read several other books in addition to that of true stories of people who suffered through loneliness. There are at least four distinct causes of loneliness. One, loneliness from transitions of life. Loneliness from transitions of life. Any change can produce loneliness in your life. After the loss of a mate, it's a difficult time. Transitions are hard, especially when they are terminal. Immigrating to a new country and encountering another culture can certainly be a very lonely experience. I remember how cut off and lonely at times I felt when I moved with my wife and 2-year-old daughter to Australia to work for the church in the Sydney office for 2 years. You see, back then there was no internet, there was no email. An hour-long phone call to the U.S. could cost a typical day's wages. To stay connected, we recorded cassette tapes and mailed them to friends and relatives. It often took weeks for the tape to arrive and then the replied cassette to come back to Australia. Although it can be a positive thing, even moving to a new home can result in being lonely temporarily. As a professor, I'm aware of this. Starting school at a university and living in a dorm can be lonely. Over the years, I've seen a number of young students become, quote, homesick, especially if they were from a foreign country. You know, starting a new job can be lonely. Yes, even retiring can be lonely. Certainly, divorce or separation can be terribly lonely. Gradually losing one's sight or hearing or mobility can lead to loneliness and isolation. The second cause of loneliness is related to the first. Loneliness from separation. Loneliness from separation. Being separated from friends or family can cause deep loneliness. For instance, we know that solitary confinement is a devastating form of punishment. In 2 Timothy 4 and verse 9, 2 Timothy 4 and verse 9, Paul says to young Timothy, "Do your best to come to me quickly." In the next few verses, Paul mentions his best friends, but none of them are with him except Luke. Paul is lonely because he is separated from his friends. Twice in this passage, in 2 Timothy 4:9 and 4:13, Paul asks Timothy to come. And then in 2 Timothy 4:21, he says, "Do your best to get here before winter." Why is he saying this? Because time is running out. He's saying, "Timothy, I may not be around much longer, and I really want to see you. Please come back and see me one last time." The third is loneliness from opposition. Loneliness from opposition. To be vigorously opposed creates a truly lonely feeling. Also, it's a lonely feeling to be misunderstood, to be embarrassed, or to be publicly humiliated. Brethren, we need to be aware of how we come across to sensitive people. I'm sure each of us at some time has not discerned that we were dealing with someone that was very sensitive. Sensitive people are often very conscientious, meticulous, and creative. They're a wonderful asset to a congregation, but they have "handle with care" written all over them. Now, being sensitive is not a disorder. In fact, my research shows that 15 to 20% of the population is classified as sensitive. So it's almost guaranteed that in any congregation there will be sensitive members. So if you have a strong, aggressive personality, it is so important for you to rein yourself in and treat sensitive people with empathy. Failing to do so will result in their withdrawing and having feelings of loneliness and rejection. They will withdraw into a shell and put up a defensive wall around them, and sadly, doing that only makes them feel lonelier. Over in Matthew 11, verse 29, we see a description of Jesus Christ. Matthew 11, 29. It says this: "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." You see, being gentle when dealing with people is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength and perception. And number four, loneliness from rejection. Loneliness from rejection. This is the form of loneliness that often causes us the most pain. Whether real or imagined, the mass killer, Elliot Rodger, felt rejected by women, and he decided to kill as many women as he could as retribution. Over there in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 16, we see Paul felt forsaken. He says of his trial before Nero, "At my first defense, no one came to my support, but everyone deserted me." Rejection is one of the most difficult things for us to handle, whether it is as children in a playground, as a teenager at a party, or as a spouse in a marriage. That's why divorce is so painful and why God hates it. It's an act of abandoning and forsaking. So to summarize, the four reasons that I've listed here for loneliness are transitions, separation, opposition, and rejection. Now, let's examine some right and wrong ways of dealing with loneliness. You see, the death of a loved one, a divorce, or the severing of a close relationship can bring grief. And most people go through what is known as a grieving process. It can take months, 6 months, or even longer at times. A key to victory is in understanding the difference between a normal, balanced grieving process and what is known as a spirit of grief. The grieving process helps the grieving person recover from loss with the passing of time. One of the books I read talks about seven different stages that one goes through in this grieving process. A spirit of grief, however, causes him or her to grow worse and sink deeper into despair. Some people try to deal with loneliness by becoming workaholics. Workaholism is not the same as working hard. Workaholism is an addiction disorder which eventually takes its toll. Others try materialism to deal with loneliness. They buy everything in sight. Shop till you drop. They think, if I can just improve the quality of my life, I'll be happy. But things don't satisfy for long. The fact is, you can't buy happiness. We've heard that, but people still try. Some people have an extramarital affair to combat loneliness. I don't know how I got on some of these mailing lists, but recently I received a spam email with the subject line, "Lonely Russian Girls Looking for Boyfriend." Another email that came in this week called "Marriage Boring" and encouraged you to go to a website to have a, quote, fun affair, end of quote. Violating the marriage covenant and pursuing an extramarital affair involves hiding, manipulation, and lying. This often results in self-loathing and increased loneliness for the person. Others turn to alcohol or drugs. Such behavior, rather than reducing loneliness, usually is a serious detriment to the drinker's health, personal relationships, and social standing. Still others lose themselves in a fantasy world by reading romantic novels one after the other, or viewing pornography, or watching an incredible number of movies, or, as Elliot Rodger did, playing violent internet video games. You see, internet addiction and other forms of destructive behavior only exacerbate isolation and loneliness. These are all poor strategies for reducing loneliness and take us further and further from a positive relationship with others and with God. So now let's examine four ways that are appropriate for dealing with loneliness. And I admit right now, these are just a few of the many that I came across. This is a huge subject, far larger than the time I have, you know, to cover it all. You see, Jesus came to earth to destroy the works of the devil. That's over in 1 John 3 and verse 8. And to give us abundant life, that's John 10 and verse 10. If we'll learn how to receive what he has made available to us, we will experience that abundant life. So let's look at a few of these ways to properly deal with loneliness. Number one, utilize your time wisely. Utilize your time wisely. You know, we've all heard this. If life gives you a lemon, make lemonade. But there's some truth to that. In other words, make the best of your bad situation. Resist the temptation to do nothing. That's one of the things that I came across over and over, is people tend to freeze and drop out. Loneliness has a tendency to paralyze you. You just sit around and do nothing. Often lonely people don't take care of themselves. They don't eat right. They don't exercise. Some even ignore personal hygiene needs. However, as bad as loneliness is, trust that God can use loneliness for good. Yes. For instance, many of Paul's letters might never have been written had he not been in prison. Just sitting there in prison, he made use of his time wisely. Examining it this way, we can see how God allowed Paul's imprisonment to work for good. And we know that all things can work for good for us. Therefore, look for ways to use your time for good rather than withdrawing and wasting your precious time. Number two, minimize your pain. Minimize your pain. The second way to deal with loneliness is to minimize the hurt that it's brought. Play down the loneliness in your mind. Don't exaggerate it And don't rehearse it over and over, saying to yourself things like, I'm so lonely. I'm so lonely. That doesn't help anything. Don't allow the loneliness to make you bitter. And don't allow resentment to build up in your life. We saw that with Elliot shot those girls. Resentment will only make you lonelier. Resentment only locks us up in a self-imposed prison and drives people away from us. So desire to be a better person, not a bitter person. Number three, recognize God's presence. Recognize God's presence. In fact, a subtitle of this whole sermon is In the Presence of God. You know, this point is so, so important. Paul recognized God's presence even while he was locked up in prison. Over in 2 Timothy 4:17, Paul said, "But the Lord stood at my side and gave me strength." But the Lord stood at my side and gave me strength. You know, Jesus experienced tremendous loneliness, both during his ministry and while being crucified. As I was writing the sermon, I was pondering that in some depth. I feel confident to say that Jesus has felt loneliness more deeply than anyone else. Certainly when his Father turned and forsook him as he took our sins upon him. Remember in Matthew 27:46, it says, "And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani? That is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" As we read this, we often place the emphasis on the word forsaken. Why have you forsaken me? Might it be more correct to read with the emphasis on the word you? Why have you forsaken me? Recall in Mark 14 and verse 50, it says, "Then they all forsook him and fled." The Father forsaking Jesus left him totally alone. If you don't fully understand that, go back and read some of the prophecies in Isaiah that describe Christ and his crucifixion. He was smitten and afflicted by God. And if you really understand what it's saying, it's the same phraseology or term that's used when someone is struck with leprosy. And how do people react to someone with leprosy? They all withdraw, right? That's Jesus Christ was like a leper up there to the world and to his Father. We need to understand how deeply lonesome he was at that time. I'm positive that Jesus Christ then understands our pain and loneliness. And he's given us assurance that as long as we are his, we will always be with him and he will always be with us. Over in John 14 and verse 18, Jesus said, "I will not leave you as orphans." You know, the very last words in the Gospel of Matthew give us assurance that we are never alone. So let's turn over to Matthew 28, and we'll read verses 18 through 20 together. Matthew 28, verses 18 through 20. Here is how The Gospel of Matthew ends with this thought. Oftentimes, what you put at the beginning and the end are usually very important, right? And Jesus came and spoke to them, saying, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things I have commanded you." And notice this. "And lo, I am with you always." My notes, I have bold and underscored the word always. "I am with you always, even to the end of the age." Now in Hebrews 13, verses 5 and 6, Hebrews 13, 5 and 6, we're again given this wonderful promise. So let's turn over and look at that. Hebrews 13, verses 5 and 6. Here, the author of Hebrews says, "Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For he himself has said," now notice this is quoting. This is in quotes. "I will never leave you nor forsake you." That's a quote. "So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me?" No matter what happens, we are not forsaken. God wants you to know that you are never alone. However, there's someone who does. Satan wants you to believe that you're all alone, but you're not. Satan wants you to believe that no one understands how you feel, but that's not true. When you are making spiritual progress, Satan may bring affliction upon you, as he did with Job. He does this to discourage you and make you feel alone. However, recall that during all of Job's suffering at the hand of Satan, God was aware of his situation, was limiting what Satan could do, and was working with Job for his ultimate good. In addition to God being with you, many fellow believers really do know how you feel and understand what you're experiencing, both mentally and emotionally. Many of your brethren have also suffered similar trials of loss, betrayal, or health problems. Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians 10 and read verse 13. 1 Corinthians 10, 13. Sometimes we feel like, oh, no one knows what I'm going through. Yes, they do. Reach out. Connect with others. Don't isolate yourself. 1 Corinthians 10, 13. "No temptation has overcome you except such as common to man." But notice the next part. "But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able." And you see, in order to do that, he's got to know what's going on. He's going to have to be aware of everything that's going on in your life. "Who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it." Not flee it necessarily, not eliminate it, but bear it sometimes. You see, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, famous story that we read about in the Old Testament, experienced affliction. Yes, they went through great trial, didn't they? But they remained firm in their commitment to the one true God. We read that over in Daniel chapter 3, and the whole story is around verses 10 through 30. I'll refer to a few of the verses here as we talk about this story. You see, when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refused the command of the wicked king Nebuchadnezzar to worship the golden image he'd set up, Nebuchadnezzar cast them into the fiery furnace, which he heated 7 times hotter than usual. However, Nebuchadnezzar was astounded, as it says in verse 24 of chapter 3, to see that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego met a fourth man in the fiery furnace, one who looked like the Son of God. Verse 25. You see, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were never alone. They were never alone, even though they were in the fiery furnace. Not only did the three come out of the furnace totally unharmed, they didn't even smell like smoke. Verse 27. Now that's paying attention to the details. Verse 30, it tells us the king then promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And God will not only bring you out of your affliction, but as with Job, he will also bring you up. Once the trial is passed, you will be in a far better situation than before the trial, even if you've died. Paul gives us this assurance over in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 16 through 18. 2 Corinthians 4, verses 16 through 18. Here we are admonished. Therefore, we do not lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, and Paul went through tremendous suffering and trials, as we all know, being beaten, shipwrecked, stoned. Our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. We've got to keep our eye on the goal. One important point in fighting loneliness is prayer. Prayer is a great comfort in lonely times. Talk to God and let Him speak back to you. When you are aware of lonely feelings, it's a sign that it's time to draw closer to God. You know, we have so many examples in the Bible of men remaining close to God while experiencing loneliness. One of the examples that came to mind as I was working on the sermon was the Apostle John. The Apostle John was exiled to the Isle of Patmos, which is a small Greek island in the Aegean Sea. We read that over in Revelation 1 and verse 9, where it says, I, John, both your brother and companion in the tribulation and kingdom and patience of Jesus Christ, was on the island that is called Patmos for the word of God and for the testimony of Jesus Christ. So because of him standing up, preaching the word, he got exiled off to this lonely, desolate island. I'm sure it was a very lonely place. It's believed that he actually lived in a cave on Patmos. However, Christ was with him, as we know, and revealed to him things which must shortly come to pass. Book of Revelation. If you want to overcome loneliness like John or Paul, first of all, utilize your time properly. 2, minimize your hurt. 3, recognize God's presence. And now the fourth thing. Empathize with other people. Empathize with other people. If you're feeling lonely, instead of focusing inwardly on yourself, focus outwardly on other people. Look outward to the needs of other people. Look for those who are in need of help or comfort. Figuratively wash their feet. That's a key to overcoming loneliness. Instead of building walls around our feelings, we need to build bridges to others. We need to stop complaining, "God, I'm so lonely," and start saying, "God, help me be a friend to somebody in need today." Ultimately, we will discover that God's agape love is the true antidote of loneliness. Let me repeat that. It's underlined here for emphasis. We will discover that God's agape love is the true antidote to loneliness. So to summarize the four ways that are appropriate for dealing with loneliness is to utilize, minimize, recognize, and empathize. You know, recently I became aware of a low-budget Christian-based movie which was released to the public this June 13th. The movie has the same name as the title of this sermon, Alone Yet Not Alone. Alone Yet Not Alone is based on an inspiring true story taken from a novel by the same name, written by Tracy Leniger Craven. It depicts a German immigrant family at a critical juncture in America's history. Fleeing religious persecution in Germany, the Leniger family sought a new start in uncharted country. In the wilderness, in an area which later became part of the Blue Mountains of Pennsylvania in America. Years 1755. And British and French forces are struggling for the control over the abundant resources of this new territory. This conflict is known as the French and Indian War. The French and Indian War was fought to decide whether France or Britain would become the stronger power in North America. Each side relying on its colonists and Indian allies to fight. Now, despite the escalating tension mounting around them, the Linegers gave thanks and praise for the sparkling streams and majestic forests around Penn's Creek, and above all, their freedom now to worship God. Carving out a homestead can be arduous work, but the Linegers labored joyfully. After all, what the land will not yield, the cherished German family Bible would. The parents had 2 sons and 2 young daughters. Barbara, 12 years of age. This book on Alone Yet Not Alone is her story. And Regina, 10 years of age. This book here, I Am Regina, is her story. They spoke German and read from a large German Bible most nights after dinner. Each girl learned many memory verses in the Bible, as well as many German hymns. And the father constantly told the girls things like this, quote, "Each of you will have times of testing in your life, but you must always remember, no matter how difficult the trial or how dense the wilderness, God will never leave you." If your hearts remain true, God promises endless blessing. End of quote. After the Bible reading in the evening, the mother would begin softly humming the tune of an old German hymn. Soon the whole family would join in, and the family would sing the comforting and rich words to "Alone, Yet Not All Alone." Then they would offer a prayer before going to bed. One day the unthinkable happened. In a terrifying raid known as Penn's Creek Massacre, Delaware warriors came to their cabin, killed and scalped the father and a brother. The mother and the other brother were off at the mill grinding corn. Then they kidnapped the two young Linegar daughters, Barbara, age 12, and Regina, 10, and carried them off. Eventually, they were separated. The two girls were taken to two different Indian villages and forced to be a part of the native culture. The natives forced them to dye their hair dark, stain their skins dark, wear the clothes of the Indian village, and so on. They went through terrible hardships. But through their ordeal, the two daughters relied on their faith in God's word and what their father had told them, and never lost hope. They were constantly surrounded by Indians, yet felt very alone. Yet not alone, for they were sustained by their faith in the God of the Bible that they loved so much. One of their memory verses was Deuteronomy 8 and verse 2. Deuteronomy 8 and verse 2. Turn over there, we'll read it together. This is one that they relied on considerably. Deuteronomy 8 and verse 2. And you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness, and certainly they were in the wilderness, to humble you and test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. The two young girls were now in their own wilderness, and each was being sorely tested, just as the ancient Israelites had been. Barbara knew that if she attempted an escape and was caught, they would burn her at the stake. You see, she had been forced to watch this done to another person who had attempted escape and was caught. However, praying for deliverance, Barbara finally attempted escape, knowing that if she was caught, she would be burned at the stake. Barbara finally escaped almost 4 years after her capture, and was eventually reunited with her mother and other brother. The movie tells Barbara's story of her capture, her life as a captive, her faith, and her miraculous escape. Her younger sister, Regina, was not able to escape and remained a captive for 9 years. Finally, a treaty with the Indians brought Regina's release. She spoke only the Indian language by then. Yet when shown a German Bible, she remembered the verses and was able to recite them even after 9 years away from civilization. This impressed the local Lutheran minister so much that he wrote back to Germany, encouraging people to have their children memorize Bible verses. See, the theme song of the movie is a song by the same name, Alone Yet Not Alone. It tells of Barbara's trust in God to lead her in her escape through the wilderness that was filled with wild animals, such as bears, and hostile Indians. Barbara knew that there is no place on earth where God is not present. She prayed and trusted God to lead her safely through the wilderness to safety. Brethren, as long as we trust God, none of us is ever really alone. The children of Israel were never alone as they wandered 40 years in the wilderness. Christ was with them during their entire wilderness journey. And the same is true for his children today. As we experience trials and tribulations in our wilderness journey, Christ is always with us. Recall what the psalmist said in Psalm 23 and verse 4. We all know the 23rd Psalm. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. And here is where it is underlined. For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You know, this is not just sweet words to recite. This is describing a truth which we can absolutely rely on. Now, some of you are aware that my wife's younger sister, Karen, died of breast cancer at the age of 53. I encouraged Sarah to go in for a mammogram. I asked her to write up in her own words a description of her experience. Quote, several years ago I had a mammogram and I was called back. When I arrived, the nurse ushered me into a room and then pinned up my x-ray film. She left the room and I got up to look at it. To my shock, there were circles drawn all over the film. Stunned, I went back to my chair, put my head down. My heart was beating rapidly. Then I heard a loud voice, clear voice, saying to me, "You are not alone." It was a real voice, not my imagination. I looked across the room, but I could see no one there. The room was empty. Having heard those words, I took a deep breath and felt a deep sense of peace come over me because I knew I was truly not alone. I knew no matter what, God was with me. Eventually, the radiologist came in, looked at the x-ray, and said I needed to be retested. After the results of the second mammogram came back, the radiologist came in and told me, everything's fine. The radiologist could only describe it as, and this is a quote, an anomaly, end of quote. Of course, an anomaly is something odd, rare, or peculiar. I left feeling I had my life back again, end of quote. To this day, Sarah can't explain who spoke those words to her, but she does know how a deep sense of peace came over her after hearing those words. Could something like this be what Paul was experiencing when he said, quote, but the Lord stood at my side and gave me strength, end of quote. Sarah and I were treated recently to the movie Alone Yet Not Alone by Brent and Becca for Father's Day, first day it was opening. The movie's song, Alone Yet Not Alone, is sung by Johnny Eric Santata. She's well known. This is a book on Johnny, and then there's another one I've read, Johnny and Ken, which is the story of her 30-something year marriage. An accident, a terrible accident, a diving accident in 1967 left Johnny at age 17 a quadriplegic, in a wheelchair without the use of her legs or her hands. She had no feeling in either one. At that time, she felt all alone as she faced a life that seemed hopeless and without purpose. She had been quite an active teen. She rode horses. She played the guitar and sang. She was an artist. She was very talented. But now she lay in a hospital, unable to move her arms and her legs. She spent 2 years in rehabilitation and finally came to realize, with the help of others, that God was with her no matter what. And she began to memorize scriptures and sang hymns to focus her mind on others and on serving God rather than on her plight. At first, when this was happening and she was in the hospital, she wanted to commit suicide. She begged her sisters as they came to visit her to cut her wrists. She said, "I won't feel it. I have no feeling." She begged them to overdose her. She even snapped her neck around, trying to break it so that she could die. But as she began to learn more and more about God's way of life and memorize these scriptures, she gave up wanting to commit suicide. She replaced her loneliness with a determination to help others in similar situations. And Johnny became an international advocate for people with disabilities. And for 47 years, Johnny has remained wheelchair bound, but has responded to her situation in a very positive way. She's the founder and CEO of Johnny and Friends International Disability Center, and has visited more than 47 countries in her work. She has been awarded multiple honorary degrees and has written over 50 books. I believe Johnny was the perfect person to be selected to sing "Alone Yet Not Alone" for the movie. You see, the Linegar sisters felt alone as prisoners of the Indians that had murdered and scalped their father and brother. In fact, they hung their father's scalp where they lived, so they had to look at it every day. However, they knew that Christ would never leave them or forsake them, and therefore, they were never really alone. The words to the movie song, "Alone Yet Not Alone," are as follows. I'm alone, yet not alone. God's the light that will guide me home, with His love and tenderness leading through the wilderness. And wherever I may roam, I'm alone, yet not alone. I will not be bent in fear. He's the refuge I know is near. In His strength I find my own, by His faithful mercies shown. That so mighty is His shield, all His love is now revealed. When my steps are lost and desperate for a guide, I can feel His touch, a soothing presence by my side. Alone yet not alone, not forsaken when on my own, I can lean upon His arm and be lifted up from harm. If I stumble or if I'm thrown, I'm alone yet not alone. When my steps are lost and desperate for a guide, I can feel His touch, a soothing presence by my side. By my side. He has bound me with His love. Watchful angels look from above. Every evil can be braved, for I know I will be saved. Never frightened on my own, I'm alone, yet not alone. I'm alone, yet not alone.